When Mary Ratliff moved to Columbia from Mississippi in 1959, she was leaving one of the epicenters of American segregation and the burgeoning civil rights movement. But that doesn't mean she escaped experiences of racism and segregation in her new home.
It was subtle here. When I first came, I've made a comment many times, and everybody laugh at me, and I just say that Columbia's big little Dixie, you know? It wasn't a whole lot different.
And Ratliff says those subtle racial divides in the community have persisted. Actually, since she became president of the Missouri NAACP in 1991, it's been part of her job to draw attention to them, a message she says is not always well received.
Somebody said one time, you know, if Mary Ratliff would just leave Columbia, everything would be okay, you know?
But Ratliff, who is also president of the Columbia NAACP, says all you really need to do to see what segregation looks like in the city today is take a walk down Broadway.
Where are we now?
We're on Broadway in front of the City County Building.
And what do you see?
Well, we have very few African-Americans down on Broadway. We have very few African-Americans, if any, that work on Broadway. And so this is just typical of what you see in Columbia.
Now, there are a number of variables that can affect what we see on Broadway at any given time. Ratliff is observing the street on the Tuesday before Christmas. The students are mostly gone. Some families are already gathering for the holidays. In 1 month, the street could look wildly different from how it looks today. And that makes statements about broader trends like segregation difficult to make using observation alone. And that's a problem MU journalism professor David Herzog faced as he sought to engage his students around the events unfolding in Ferguson.
A bunch of us at the university wanted to get together and brainstorm on some ideas for doing some reporting that would be helpful in illuminating what was going on there and in other cities around Missouri.
So with his reporting class, Herzog calculated measures of disparity, including segregation, in the 22 Missouri cities with at least 10,000 people and an African-American population of at least 10%. Columbia was one of them, and so was Ferguson. For the most part, Columbia's indicators are middle of the pack. But by one measure in particular, Columbia's segregation is higher than most cities in Missouri, including Ferguson. Dissimilarity is one of the more widely used measures of segregation. In this particular case, it measures how evenly or not African-American households are distributed across Columbia as a whole. Of the 22 cities measured, Columbia's dissimilarity is the seventh highest, meaning the seventh most segregated. And of the 25 census tracts that make up the city, the dissimilarity of one tract stands apart. Census Tract 21 is one of Columbia's smallest by land area, but is home to nearly 10% of the city's black population. And it's located just north of the downtown business district, so just north of Broadway. Broadway has also served as a staging area for protests, like this one, which began in front of City Hall on December 12th. The protest, which was organized by a group of students called MU for Mike Brown, was one of several held across the United States that week in response to grand jury decisions exonerating officers in the deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson and Eric Garner in New York. 21-year-old Justin Cutts was one of the group's organizers. He says data and measures like the ones Herzog's class compiled don't tell the full story about segregation and the black experience.
You have those people who are interested in seeing what are the facts, what are the data. I prefer to just take people to where I live, where I stay, take them around my family, get them to ask other black people that they might know, other minorities that they might know, anybody that might be in a situation of poverty, and see how they have grown up and what experiences they've gone through.
A little over a week before classes begin, graduate students at MU found out they would not be receiving their promised health insurance subsidies from the university. MU made this decision based on IRS guidance, which could affect the way universities across the country provide health insurance to graduate students. Rebecca Smith from the KBIA Health and Wealth Desk reports.
More than 500 graduate students crowded into an overflowing gym earlier this week, just days after learning that the university would not be giving them subsidies, which help them pay for health insurance. For over an hour, frustrated students gathered to speak. Jennifer McKinney Wilson was one of these graduate students. She's a fifth-year PhD candidate in sociology who makes about $11,000 a year, like most grad students at MU.
When we found out Friday that we had lost our insurance, I was 22 days away from my delivery date.
Yep, 22 days from having her baby. Now her due date is inching even closer, and she says the added stress triggered preterm labor pains.
Well, being a graduate student's always been a little difficult and challenging. Up until today, there were sacrifices, but it was doable. And now it doesn't seem so doable.
McKinney Wilson is one of the more than 3,000 grad students affected at MU. And while some students are covered by their parents' or spouse's insurance, many are not so lucky and are uncertain of their options. But what caused MU to stop giving these health insurance subsidies in the first place? Well, the answer comes down to difficulties in interpreting the Affordable Care Act. Here's Stephen Bloom, the Director of Federal Relations for the American Council on Education, to explain.
Well, the IRS issued the regulations a couple of years ago. They were worried employers were going to avoid the employer mandate.
That's the requirement that large companies must provide affordable health care for employees.
Avoid the employer mandate by giving money to employees, where the employee could then go and take that money and go out on the individual market and buy individual insurance.
So this affects graduate students because many of them are employed as graduate assistants for the university. Instead of having them on a group plan, MU lets them buy insurance through its student health insurance plan. But the federal government considers student health insurance plans individual health insurance. So that means it's now a problem for the school to give subsidies to help students pay for insurance. More than 1,000 graduate students and their allies gathered today in support of graduate students after the university took away student health insurance subsidies earlier this month. The decision was made due to unclear IRS guidance, and within a week, the university replaced the subsidies for a year. Now students are asking for more guaranteed health insurance, help with childcare, and a stipend that is a livable wage. Angela Speck is the director of astronomy and one of the faculty members who spoke at the rally today. And she says graduate students are essential to the university's mission.
Without them, we will not have a university. And they need to know that they have the support of the faculty, and so does our administration.
Graduate student leaders say they have already spoken with the administration about these and other issues, and they expect conversations to continue. I'm Rebecca Smith, KBIA News.
Earlier today, UM System President Tim Wolf responded to the announcement of Jonathan Butler's hunger strike. Butler announced Monday on Twitter that he would embark on a hunger strike until he lost his life or Wolf resigned. Wolf says he would like to help, but it starts with conversation.
I mean, we have got to create an environment on this beautiful campus and the other three campuses that we have where all students can be successful, regardless of where they came from, their race, their degree program, whatever. We have got to maximize everything that we can do focusing on student success. And I can only do that through conversations by understanding the hurdles and obstacles that are in front of Jonathan or anybody else.
Supporters of the cause and Butler were not satisfied with Wolf's responses and demanded he resigned or they would attempt to have him fired. Wolf said he would set up a meeting with Butler and the Board of Curators. Ross Terrell, KBIA News.
From the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, I'm Ryan Famuliner. The University of Missouri Board of Curators is currently meeting amidst national attention surrounding University of Missouri System President Tim Wolf and students at the University of Missouri in Columbia. The meeting was called last minute last night. KBIA's Rebecca Smith tells us students are calling for Wolf's resignation following racist incidents on and off campus at MU in the last few months.
In October, a student group, Concerned Student 1950, released a list of demands calling for Wolf's resignation. Jonathan Butler, a black graduate student, then began a hunger strike last week, again calling for Wolf's resignation or his, that is Butler's, death. On Saturday evening, athletes of color on the Mizzou Tigers football team released a statement via Twitter, stating they would not participate in, quote, any football-related activities until Wolf resigns or is removed from office. John Fougere, a spokesman for Wolf's office, says despite calls for his removal, Wolf wants to lead the campus in change.
The president desires to be a leader, just as he was on the Title IX sexual misconduct issue. And, you know, he wants to be the person who can help bring this conversation together.
Rebecca Smith, KBIA News, Columbia.
KBIA has reporters at that 10 a.m. Board of Curators meeting and will have the very latest as this story develops and will carry any public statements on our air live as they happen.
That is, well,
Hi, welcome to the special report for KBIA News. We are listening in to the live Board of Curators meeting happening here on the University of Missouri campus. And the curators are discussing right now whether or not to let University of Missouri System President Tim Wolf to speak at the beginning of the meeting. He's now going to begin speaking here in just a moment. We're going to take you live to this feed and continue to cover this story live throughout this morning.
So, good morning. Thank you for coming today. I am resigning as president of the University of Missouri System today.
From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Ryan Femuliner. Students celebrate on the University of Missouri campus this morning as they surround Jonathan Butler, a student who declared last week he was going on a hunger strike until UM System President Tim Wolf resigned. Butler and other students say Wolf failed as a leader on diversity issues. Dozens of MU football players joined in over the weekend, saying on Twitter they would not participate in any football activities until Wolf was out. This morning, it happened.
Please, please use this resignation to heal, not to hate, and let's move forward together for a brighter tomorrow.
That was Tim Wolf resigning his post just before a last-minute Board of Curators meeting just after 10 this morning. When addressing the room and the board, Wolf says he, quote, took full responsibility for the inaction that has occurred. In his address, Wolf noted that while many individuals would be pleased to know that he was stepping down from the position, Wolf and his, quote, gracious supporters would keep the university near them.
We stopped listening to each other. We didn't respond or react. We got frustrated with each other. And we forced individuals like Jonathan Butler to take immediate action or unusual steps to effect change.
From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Nick Yale. The deans of 9 different colleges at the University of Missouri sent a letter to the Board of Curators calling Chancellor Arbo and Lofton to step down. KBIA's Christopher Husted reports.
In the letter, the deans write that Chancellor Lofton has created a, quote, toxic environment through threat, fear, and intimidation, according to the Columbia Daily Tribune. Journalism Dean David Kirpius signed the letter and says ultimately Lofton is responsible for the mistrustful atmosphere on campus because of his leadership role.
I'm concerned about the climate on campus, not just with race and with the swastika incident in the dorm, but also the graduate student issues and having those move toward resolution.
Lofton has been criticized for mishandling graduate student health care and racial incidents on the Columbia campus. University of Missouri System President Tim Wolf announced his resignation today after coming under fire for his lack of response to racial incidents. Christopher Husted, KBIA News.
The Board of Curators meeting has reopened after a 6-hour meeting plus today. Board Chair Donald Cupps is now speaking. We're going to take you live to that with the news that not only after the resignation of Tim Wolf this morning, now Chancellor Arbo and Lofton has announced that he is also going to resign his post as Chancellor, stay on at the university in a research role starting January 1st. We take you now live to Donald Cupps speaking.
The board is announcing a series of initiatives which include a first ever Chief Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity Officer will be appointed for the University of Missouri system.
MU Chancellor Arbo and Lofton is on the way out.
I have decided today that I will transition from the role of Chancellor of the University of Missouri, effective the end of this year, and move into a new role where I will work with many people across the university and with the system to advance our research mission.
From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. It was an emotional day at Mizzou, and today on Intersection, we're bringing you voices from across the campus responding to the day's events. Around 10 o'clock this morning, people gathered around the tent camp set up by members of Concerned Student 1950. Eventually, several hundred people covered the lawn. This is Jonathan Butler, the graduate student who went on a hunger strike.
At the end of all this, after all the letters we've sent, all the in-person interactions, after all the forums we've attended, after all the tweets and DMs that we've sent, telling the administration about our pain, it should not have taken this much. And it is disgusting and vile that we find ourselves in a place that we do.
Our team spoke with people all around campus about what they want to see moving forward.
What is your response to Tim Wolf's resignation?
Hi, my name is Matthew Murphy, and my response is that I think he definitely made the right choice amidst all of the heat and hatred that's been going on. It was definitely time for him to go at this point, and I think hopefully this will lead to more and more inclusive environment on campus with whoever takes over his position.
What do you think the next steps that the university and the UM system should take?
I think the next steps are definitely need to just include at least addressing every issue that occurs. I think that was the main problem with Wolf, just not speaking at all, which ignorance being the same as being against something at that point. So they need to address every issue and try to create a more inclusive space, safe space for all students on the campus.
My name's Devin Hill. I'm a junior here. I mean, I understand where all the protesters are coming from right now. I mean, obviously it's an issue, but I feel like him resigning isn't going to solve the entire problem. Yeah, I think that some of their demands are reasonable, but forcing him to resign, I think is a little bit irrational. I mean, it is true that he has had a lack of response to some of the racial issues, but I think it could have been handled a little bit better. Maybe negotiated with the demands of other protesters, you know, implement. I mean, at the end of the day, forcing him to resign isn't going to really solve anything. It might get stuff started, but it's not a good start, so.
From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Bram Sable-Smith. Yesterday was a big news day in our city, and surely you already know about the high-profile resignations at the University of Missouri. Both the UM system president and MU chancellor are out. And at this point, it's likely you've also heard that most of the demonstrators who catalyzed those resignations did not want to talk to the press.
Go home! Reporters have got to go! Hey, hey! Go home! Reporters have got to go! Hey,
there's a video making its way around the internet. If you haven't seen it, it's not hard to find. In it, there's a photographer, an MU student, insisting on his right to take photos. And the demonstrators insist he needs to leave.
Yes, I can. This is the First Amendment that protects your right to stand here, protects mine.
One of the demonstrators sizes up the photographer here, and they stare at each other pretty tensely, lips pursed.
I know that. I know you better back up.
Why?
I know that.
Don't push me.
Not long after that, a reporter with headphones comes in the screen and says something inaudible to the photographer. The photographer looks at him for a moment and continues on. What that reporter said was, "There's nothing to gain from this. I know that because that reporter was me." Chances are you're going to see a lot of stories about this video, not about me, but about the First Amendment and about who is right and who's wrong here. I don't know who's right and who's wrong. But a funny thing happened yesterday, and honestly, I feel like I need to talk about it.
You lost this one, bro. You lost this one, bro. Back up. You lost this one, bro. You just lost this one, bro.
That's one of the demonstrators telling the photographer to back up. This demonstrator was a black man, but other demonstrators in the area were white, black, men, women. The photographer appears to me to be Asian, though I didn't ask him. But myself and most of the other reporters there yesterday were white men. There's no avoiding talking about race here, not in a story about a demonstration against systematic oppression. And while there were many, many moments of unity between everyone, there were other moments where that was not the case. And for me, this came up in a big way later on in the morning. I accidentally found myself with a USA Today reporter inside what you might call the inner circle of demonstrators. And needless to say, as journalists, we were not a welcome presence. That other reporter, a white man from Denmark, said, "I have a right to be here." One of the demonstrators, also a white man, replied,
"Step back, and I'm not speaking on anybody's behalf. I'm speaking on my behalf. Get the back."
Then two more demonstrators, who were black women, called for more people to come help move us away.
"Can black man please come over here, please? Thank you. Black man!
Black man!"
This hit me pretty hard. It was playing on the fear of a stereotype so culturally ingrained it's at once taboo and unavoidable. And I couldn't help but question, what was I doing here? What value was I adding to this conversation by being there? At the same time, I also had to wonder, what's the point of shutting me out? When I got back to my desk yesterday, a reporter in St. Louis tweeted at me about a photo I had posted showing demonstrators blocking out the media. "What's the rationale for blocking out the media?" he asked. I replied, I asked, was told no comment. This appears to be a concern, he wrote back, referencing a tweet that read, "White media loves to make things about them. It's disgusting." Honestly, I understand the sentiment. Here I am writing this story, after all. But I don't really know what to make of the whole day, really. And it sure would help to have a conversation. Graham Sablesmith, KBIA News, Columbia.
It kind of I didn't understand what was happening at first. Mm-hmm. What did you think was happening?
You know, I had seen signs on Twitter earlier in the week because I have a bunch of friends who have been following this issue for a couple weeks now, and the signs were like, "No media, safe space." And you know, I had thought at the time, you know, you can't possibly enforce that because this is a public quad, and you know, I can't speak to why they decided to camp in that particular spot. Personally, I don't know that it was a wise decision to try to establish a safe space in a public space, because to me, it just, you know, there's a disconnect there.
Racial issues have been festering at Mizzou for so long and seen such little response from the administration that the group Concerned Student 1950 decided it was time to call for System President Tim Wolf's job. Member Jonathan Butler started a hunger strike, vowing not to eat until Wolf was removed or resigned. 5 days later, black members of the football team tweeted support. Professor of Higher Education Eddie Como says that's when he thinks the tide turned for the administration.
It wasn't until the athletic department, specifically the football team, got involved that they actually began to think about what they can do to appease a critical mass of students who were certainly had some demands on the table.
Como, who teaches at UC Riverside, says a bottom line administrators can't ignore is the economic powerhouse of the football team, especially one in the Southeastern Conference.
When you have schools that rely on ticket sales, where they're drawing 80,000+ fans, to say that you're going to boycott a game and not participate, I mean, you might be losing excess of $1 million per Saturday.
Indeed, the team's involvement in the cause pushed the deadline up for the university to respond to Butler's demand, with a $1 million penalty on the line for missing the next game. Although the multi-million dollar athletic program could likely afford that, it's no couch change. Now, historically, we've seen athletes stand up for issues such as facility conditions, concussive injury prevention, and economic exploitation of their images. Como says the Mizzou situation is different, though, and possibly transformative for future student movements.
What I see unique about this situation more than anything is the fact that not only did it include athletes, it included their non-athlete peers that initiated this movement.
Many of these college athletes at Mizzou are students who are growing up in a post-Ferguson and Black Lives Matter world, where public rallies against discrimination have become more common and effective through social media and demonstrations. Another place we can see the shift in power is how quickly head coach Gary Pinkel and athletic director Mac Rhodes fell in line to support the team. That wasn't the case when Northwestern football players recently tried to unionize. Pinkel told reporters this week that his individual support of the cause and the hunger strike wasn't why he backed his players.
It had nothing to do with that. It simply had to do with my players deeply cared about this guy and he was dying, and will you support me, coach? And that's what I did.
Christopher Morphew is the Associate Dean of Education at the University of Iowa. He says for the coach, it goes beyond maintaining a sense of community and safety for his players.
The coach has to think about what is my ability to bring in high-quality players, many of whom are African-American, into this community and onto this team if I don't get behind my players in this instance.
Morphew says universities should take the protests and resignations that went down in Missouri as a tale of caution.
I think it makes it more likely that student athletes in the future will believe that they can have an impact on campus proceedings and have an impact on campus crises.
Professor Eddie Como agrees.
Many of these students have found or are finding their voice, right? They understand what's at stake here. They understand that movements don't happen the same way that they happened in the 60s.
Ultimately, Morphew says with the economic and political influence student athletes are realizing they have, universities should take heed.
This should behoove leaders to believe that when they're surrounded by students at an event and they essentially refuse to engage with the students over and over again, that can have a very important impact on their tenure as a leader on campus.
Morpheus says don't expect the field hockey team to have the same impact, but don't be surprised to see more cross-campus support for causes among athletes and non-athletes. Christopher Husted, KBIA News.
From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Rebecca Smith. Over the past few weeks, there's been a lot of focus on the experiences of Black students on the University of Missouri campus. Multiple protests and rallies were held to bring attention to MU's poor response to racist incidents. Last week, following the resignation of former UM System President Tim Wolf and racist threats made on social media, a We Are Not Afraid march was held Wednesday night. Students gathered at the Gaines Oldham Black Culture Center and walked through campus to the Student Center, where they gathered in healing circles to share their thoughts and experiences. Here are a few students from the march sharing what they are experiencing and what they want from their university, in their own words.
I got involved with the movement because if one person feels threatened, the whole community should feel threatened. I never thought that I would be involved in an organization like this. It was beautiful seeing everyone coming together, and I'm just really, really grateful that I've gotten to grow closer with the Black community here and with other allies who come closer to Mizzou. I really got to immerse myself in Mizzou's culture and learn more about what my university stands for. I just definitely want to see more solidarity within grades, within races. I want to see people be more informed, because people are not informed. Just from a freshman's perspective, it's a huge divide between whites and blacks. So I just would like more integration and more information on both sides.
All came to support the Black students at Mizzou. Just wanted to show support for people of different cultures who are attending schools that are majority Caucasian, in order for them to feel safe and feel comfortable.
I believe that we will win!
I see a lot of people who don't understand the movement at all and don't understand why we felt the need to do everything that we do or the list of demands. And it kind of like, it makes me upset, because it's like, this is exactly what we're fighting about. Like, this is like the whole purpose of the group is to combat racism at Mizzou. And while we're trying to combat racism, there's more racism that's being added on. I think Mizzou needs to be a little bit more serious about diversity training and inclusion.
What concrete steps can be taken to change the culture of campus so that people do feel included?
I think that has a lot to do with education and conversation. I'm a part of this race relations committee on the Columbia campus. I was appointed to that group before I left the campus, and I'm still on it, so I'm kind of happy with that. But it was a very diverse group of faculty, students, and staff, men, women, black, white, and Hispanic, and I think it's a Puerto Rican woman on it. But we have been talking about these issues around a table like this all summer, every week or two for a couple of hours. And it's remarkable how members of that group who were at different points on the pole when we started have all found a place somewhere in the middle. Those who did not believe that racism was real have come to the conclusion from listening to people who have described what their marginalization looks like and how it makes them feel and how it interferes with their learning and their comfort in this community. And when you hear it from someone that you trust and respect because you've developed a relationship, it becomes more real for them. And when you have students who are reacting in a very emotional way to the repeated microaggressions that they've been subjected to, they can come off as angry and frustrated, but then when they see how that kind of behavior turns off the well-meaning but unknowing majority group person, then you can see a little bit of an adjustment in how they deliver the message. And I think we need more of that. You know, we need more honest conversation amongst family members.